Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, if you want to talk cars, you can. We're going to start off with the phone number, 602-508-0960, but today is story time. We're going to start off with story time. 100 years ago, Mark and Renee bought a motorhome in the 90s, and we were heading to California. And we were outside of the border, Arizona border, on Arizona side. And we were on a four-lane road, but the left side of the road had the opposing lanes, but then there was a big cliff there. So we're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, and there's trucks all around me, big trucks all around me. And all of a sudden, the left front tire blows. We're heading towards the the edge. God was with me. I recovered. And all I remember is that on the CB radio, I heard this guy say, come on over, motorhome, come on over, motorhome. And so I pulled off to the right, and I looked and could see that the trucks had slowed down to give me room to gather myself up and get off to the road on the right. So anyway, we had a blowout. We had some damage to the coach. We changed it, and that was it. Fast forward some months or a year later, we're going into Albuquerque on the 40, and all of a sudden, one of the rear tires blows out and damages it. Now, these are Goodyear tires, and they're called G159s. The G159 was created in the late 90s, early 2000 year, and it was a tire that was predominant on motorhomes. At the time, I worked for Goodyear Belts and Hose Division, and so I had two blowouts. Actually, we ended up having three, but I had two blowouts. I had some cosmetic damage to the as the tire flopped around inside and damaged the paint and stuff like that. And I requested Goodyear to make good and provided the tires, and they said it was my fault. And so at the time, I was working for Goodyear doing some media, and so I submitted my resignation. Well, there was a guy named Ron Heller in the Goodyear arena, and Ron came to me and he says, look, he says, I'm going to give you a product credit to cover your motorhome as long as you stay with us. And I thought, that's fine. So this goes... This G169 goes on, and as an expert, I'm starting to get calls about the G159 blew up and people died, and motorhomes crashed, and motorhomes rolled, and I remember one on the Gila Bend Road between Interstate 8 and Interstate 10 where motorhome and blows and crosses the lane and kills people, and part of the people that died were newlyweds. So I'm involved in these with respect to the maintenance of the tires and motorhome application and stuff like that. This goes on for years and years and years. So probably 3-4 years ago, I'm involved in a case out of New Mexico. And this older couple's driving down 25, and they're heading south from Albuquerque or north, I don't remember. Tire blows, thing rolls over, and people are seriously hurt. Well, at this particular point, the industry kind of knows that this Goodyear G159 ain't working real well. There's lots of suits about it, and Goodyear puts up a fight on every single one, in Mark's opinion. So there's a guy that is a lawyer here in town, and he hires me to talk about the maintenance and so forth of the tire. Well, him and Goodyear get into it. And it's an ugly situation. It's just, I mean, it's just ugly. And it's in federal court. And the judge ends up disciplining both of them and all kinds of stuff. And all this time, Goodyear says that the test results of this tire are missing. And as I remember, it was a computer crash. And the test results are missing. Well, there's this Goodyear employee in the East Coast, and he's told to provide some documentation to a lawyer who's suing Goodyear. So it's probably a paralegal or something like that. So the paralegal sends this data to an attorney in Florida, and he finds out that this data is the stuff that's been missing for all these years. And what a gold mine, because this is what it said. It said Goodyear had tested this tire, and it was made specifically for FedEx and UPS and local delivery trucks. Local delivery trucks. But in the year 2000, in the early 2000s, the motorhomes were coming out of the ground and they were on. And Goodyear said, here, put these on the motorhome. Well, motorhomes weigh more than general delivery trucks. And they go faster than 45, 50 miles an hour. So all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose when this document that Goodyear said didn't exist comes alive. So I'm going to fast forward through all the minutia, and the number one guy in the tire division is gone. The local attorney has been fired. There's been all kinds of people that have been damaged by Goodyear by this thing. Goodyear has paid out millions and millions of dollars because everybody gets to come back and have another shot at him now that this data's there. This G159 tire has been something that Salem won't even touch. I'll give you an example. An attorney friend of mine, his father died, and he brought his Bounder motorhome over to the shop. Said, check it out, get it ready to go. My wife and I and the kids are excited. What had G159s on it? So I called him up and I said, hey, these are death tires. Yeah, people die all the time because they have these tires. You need to get these tires off. I don't know if I can afford it. And they really looked pretty new. And so he's a good friend of mine. And so I say to him, either you put new tires on it or I am. And I'll put them on, and if you don't want to pay me, you don't pay me. But, I mean, I feel that strongly about it. And he goes, well, what are you going to do with the tires? They're brand new. And I said, I'm going to drill a one-inch hole in the sidewall of every single one of those tires, so they'll all six of them, so they'll never see the light of day again, because that's a death tire. That's Mark Salem calling it what it is. So he says, okay, go ahead. And I go, wait a minute. Is it okay? Go ahead and put the new tires on it. Your expense or my expense? And he goes, no, I'll pay for them. So the other day, I'm up in Payson, and there's a retired military guy and his wife. They're retired military. And they bought it. He calls me up and he goes, there's a Bounder motorhome in Payson, and I want you to come with me. I understand you know a little bit about motorhomes. Well, folks, I've owned motorhomes since 1973. And I know motorhomes inside and out. I know 99% of what you need to know about motorhomes. I can fix or diagnose or whatever. So I go with him to look at this motorhome, and it's like, it's a 2000. He's buying it from the original owner. It's been stored its whole life, and it has, I don't know, 20,000 miles on it. It's a cherry. And so we're walking around, and we're trying the refrigerator and the furnace and the air conditioning and the generator. It's just perfect. And I think the guy wanted $20,000 for it. And I said, well, you offer him $17,000. He goes, well, my research says that $20,000 is a real deal. And I said, well, Mark Salem always offers a little bit. You can come up, but it's hard to go down when he accepts your offer. So anyway, he buys it. But during the inspection, I thought, well, I need to check the spare. I take the tire cover off the rear bumper, and I find a brand new G159. Brand new. Let me say this. Never been on the road. The tire was made November of 1999. It was put on this coach brand new because it's a 2000. Well, first of all, it's past the 10-year mark. It should have been thrown away a long time ago if anybody knew about it. But they didn't. So he's saying, why are you so uptight about that tire? And I said, that tire will kill people. So you need to get rid of it. Oh, no, it looks brand new. I'm going to use it. So I went over to his motorhome. I took the tire off. I took it back to the shop. I took the G159. I drilled a hole in the sidewall. I put a new tire on there, and I gave it back to him. And I said, here. She says, well, I'll pay you for it. So we'll work that out. But that's how passionate I am about the G159. But I'm also passionate to know, so that you know, that Mark Salem's opinion is this went on way too many years of this lying and lying and lying. And people were killed and hurt. And I rarely get on this kind of a pedestal. But I was involved in this. So people get hurt and died because of this tire. And now the government's involved. And now they're letting people go back to the well. And now they're fining law firms. And they're fining all kinds of people major dollars. The case I was involved in, the government fined somebody, either the attorney that was representing Goodyear or Goodyear, like $2.6 million. Find them. So this is a big deal. And here we are 40 years later. No, 20 years later. I'll get my math right. 20 years later, started in 2000. So here we are. And you remember the Firestone 500, and that tire was a miserable failure and was killing people right and left. And everybody remembers the Firestone 500. Everybody does. But this Goodyear G159, the only people that are really in the loop on that is motorhome owners. And that's because those of us that work on the motorhomes, if you bring a car in and you don't change out those G159s, I'm not even touching the tires. I don't even want to be involved. I'm not going to do anything but air them up. Because the last person that touches that's going to be in the lawsuit. So if you have a motorhome, the moral of this stupid story is this. You better look at the tires. And if it says G159, then you need to get that off your coach if you value your family and everybody else on the road. Because that tire is a death tire. Mark Salem says that tire is a death tire. And it has hurt a lot of people. And the thing that winds up my panties on this is that the documentation for the testing of this disappeared. And then all of a sudden it shows up and finds out that this is a 45-mile-an-hour tire that should be used in delivery, city, inner-city delivery services that was sold to the motorhome manufacturers. And here's another problem. The other problem is that the chassis manufacturers like Spartan that took the tires and put them on the chassis, then Fleetwood and other people built the motorhome on top of it. They were involved in every lawsuit, too. So you have the chassis manufacturer, you have the person driving the car, and you have the motor coach manufacturer all saying, whoa, wait a minute, this is a pattern failure. So I'm just warning you, if that tire on your motorhome says G159, if you think that I know anything about this issue, then take the tire off. That's the best thing for you to do is just take the tire off. And if you want a really good deal on tires, I'm happy to give it to you. I'm not going to extend the I'll replace your tire for free because I'm not that smart and I'm not that stupid. But the idea is that it's a bad deal. The case that I was on in Scottsdale is still going on. Still going on. Because it's an amazing situation, and after this came up, oof, and you can't believe all hell broke loose. That was a happy day in that year for me as somebody called me and said, hey, they just found the documentation for the G159. Well, what did it say? It's an inner city tire. It had like a 45 mile an hour speed limit, 45 or something like that speed limit. It was built for that. And of course, motorhomes drive a little faster. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The storytelling is over. You're welcome to give us a call and we'll fix your car or do the best we can. Well, 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock and I've calmed down about my rant. But here's something that I offer you as well. If you were to Google G159 Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z, G159, and then the name Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z, you can read all about it. But Jalopnik, I think it's what it's called, Jalopnik, is one of the places that has the best series of facts that you want. And it's really interesting because it's a real good novel. This guy gets caught and he lies about this and he tells the judge this and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, I want to tell you about a repair shop that I can vouch for in every single way. It's Larry Harker's Auto and they're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really proud to recommend them. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto and Ellen's at the front counter. Bob's in the shop. And I want to tell you, they have talent that is in the upper 5% of our industry. So if you're in that area and you need an oil change or you need to find out why it sounds like there's a dog barking underneath the hood, Larry Harker's Auto is the place to go. Harold, good morning. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, Mark. Great story on those tires. I'm sure you're going to help a lot of people.
I hope so.
I've got two subjects. One is, on the TV the other night, I heard a commentator state that within 7 to 8 years, 90% of the new vehicles, passenger type, are going to be all electric. Now, if this is true, won't this have a major impact on the car repair business and the auto parts business?
Yes, if that happens. But they have a limited range and probably won't be able to go to New York City in 2 days. They are real fast, at least the one that's predominant out there right now. And they're very expensive, and they're very nice. But really and truly, when you start talking about buying an electric car at today's prices at $40,000 to $75,000, then that turns a lot of people away. You can buy an economy car like a Toyota Corolla or a Camry or a Honda or the small Chevys, Ford, and Dodges, and you're not going to pay nearly that much money, and you're going to have pretty decent fuel economy. So I'm not worried about it a bit, because I don't think we're going to get the entire earth to go to an electric car, and even then we're still going to have lawnmowers, and I'm pretty good at that.
All right, okay, my second question is, my daughter decided to purchase a new Hyundai Sonata.
Okay.
And I know nothing about Hyundais, and I would like to hear your comments on them.
The Hyundai is, when they first came out, they were the biggest piece of horse excrement that you could have. But today, they're really good cars. Today, they've learned their lesson. My wife is sitting here next to me. Hyundai, and what's the other one? Oh, let me turn your mic up.
Oh, I can't think of it right now, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. There is another sister Korean car there, the Hyundai, but I would not have any problems having my daughter buy one and drive one. They are no different than the really, and then they're in the top 25% with respect to maintenance and dependability. So I know a lot of I'm going to catch a little bit of grief from the veterans groups and stuff like that, and I understand that. But unfortunately, this is a good car. So whatever position you take, I don't think it's a good idea to say the car's a piece of crap. I guess that's the question. That's the answer.
Well, that's what I had heard, that they are much better automobiles today than they were before.
Oh, I can't tell you. You'd open up the hood, and they'd have, and I'm exaggerating slightly, they'd have a mile's worth of vacuum line and then 100 miles worth of wiring, and they had terminology and stuff like that nobody knew. And the other one's Kia. Renee just came up with that. So
actually, a friend did in text us.
Who was that?
Jim.
Oh, bots. Yeah. Hyundai and Kia.
Right.
Both of those cars are really good cars. And in Mark Salem's opinion, those are really close in they're really comparable to the Hondas and the Toyotas.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Okay, good enough. Harry?
Harry, doggone it. How are you?
Good, fine. Hey, I was glad you did a revisit on those motorhome tires, the Goodyears. I wonder if you can kind of extend that a little bit with the trailer tires. I know Goodyear Marathons, I had those on the travel trailer I had, and I had a period where I went through about, three or four tires in about a 2,500 mile period, and I had them all, aired up properly, and I used your gun deal, but they just kind of went away, and I kind of found that they were made in different countries too, Canada, Australia, U.S., and then finally, of course, China.
Yeah. Trailer tires, ST, standard trailer tires, that's the
right.
Letters before. They have always been designed to run at 45 to 55 miles an hour. And so I'm not even going to say you, when Mark Salem is running a trailer and running at 70, 75 miles an hour, I'm really putting those tires into an area they're not supposed to be. And then depending on the load and how hot they get, the glue comes apart somewhere between 200 and 220. So that tire is going to die at 220 thereabouts, or if not before. So we have all this movement. Now today, some of the ST tires will handle the speed and handle the load, and they're very dependable. But you're talking about a tire I'm really familiar with, the Marathon. And I'm, along with you, have experienced a significant amount of trailer tires. But let me say this, and then if you want to talk about it more, then we'll do it after at the top of the break. When we go to Payson, from the time you get on the B line at Gilbert all the way, and I think that mile marker is somewhere around 190, something like that, and you get to Swor Lake at the mile marker 200. On the way there, the roadway looks fine and all that kind of stuff. On the way, on the other side of the freeway, it's littered with trailer tires, and if you look at the roadway, it's grooved. It's unusually grooved. And that's where the tire blows off the boat trailer, and the rim goes on the ground and grooves the pavement. Those of you that drive the B-line, you look and you'll see exactly what Mark Salem sees. Renee,
yes.
Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I've seen that a lot.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that you were awake.
Oh, yeah, I'm awake. And last night, when we were coming up, and so many just passenger car tires that were flat and people on the side of the road.
You're right.
So,
you're right. Yeah. There was a lot of flat tires last night when we came in here. Right. There was a lot of cars off the side of the road with their four-way flashers on.
Right.
But Harry, you're right. Most of us are using P-metric passenger car tires. But I want to comment about, you know, China and Australia and all the different places. So when we come back, with permission, and you can stay through the break, because if you have anything else,
okay.
I'll take you.
Sounds good.
But it's the tires, this China thing and the Japanese thing that prefaced all this kind of stuff and where it's made and what da-da-da-da. I want to talk to that because that's not something I deal with because I'm comfortable with that. And one of the things that I'll tell you is that there's reason that I'm comfortable putting those kinds of parts on your car. We'll be back in a minute. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem sitting here with Renee Salem. We've been business partners since 1979.
Way too long.
Way too long. And just get your mic a little closer to your mouth.
Okay. Come on, you want me to be really loud.
I do. And right there is good, right there. Okay, talk loud.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I have a list of best car repair shops, and I've had this list since 1988. Here's my promise to you. If you have a problem with one of the shops, and the complaint goes through some kind of courtroom somewhere, and if the shop is found at fault, I will reimburse you up to $5,000. So if you have a transmission that fails and the guy won't make it right and he gets kicked off, and if somebody like the Better Business Bureau says he's wrong, then I pay you $5,000. It's never happened. Never happened since 1988. They're good guys. Kurtz Automotive, I-17, and Bell is the same king. Been around since 1987, does gas and diesel. And between him and Eric, they can fix anything. So if you're up in the I-17 and Bell Road area, it's a good place. Harry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you recommended, too, that you could go to a heavy-duty truck tire in place of the trailer tires, where you could have a little more than 65 miles an hour, I think.
Well,
you had the limit of trailer tires.
It's this, Harry, and most people don't know this and don't do it. The trailer holds 8,000 pounds, so we know that some of it's going to be on the tongue, but we have to have 8,000 pounds of tires. Well, the P-metric tires, which passenger cars, it's what we use. P-metric tires is on passenger cars, and Renee drives her Ford Edge at 150 miles an hour. So we know the P-metric will handle speed. A lot of guys put P-metric tires on their trailers so they can go a little faster with comfort. Here's the sin. You got a 14,000-pound trailer with three or four quads on it, and you got 10,000 pounds of tires underneath it. Then the tire blows out, and they blame me. Oh, you're wrong. Oh, well, let's go weigh your trailer. Let's go weigh the trailer and give me the weights on all your quads, and then let's weigh your trailer and let's see what kind of gross vehicle weight that is. So there's some mathematics that go along there, but it's something to easy. Now, let's talk about offshore stuff. Everything offshore is made to the United States company's specification. They make it offshore because it's cheaper. And by the time they ship it back here and they put it on your car, there's all these people in the food chain, including the installer, Mark Salem, that make money. we don't make more money, but the guy who brings it from China here or from Korea here. It's also important to know that the Ford trucks have Hitachi ignition and fuel delivery systems, and then they also have Denso rotating electrical, which is starters and alternators. They come from there. Now, we sell lots of Toyo tires, and people are a little bit worried about that, but Toyo has a factory in Atlanta, Georgia. My son Alan's been there. He said, Dad, it's the most sophisticated place you've ever seen. If they test every single tire. If a tire is bad, they stop the line. They pull the backwards 10,000 or whatever tires, and they just start all over again, and they figure out what's wrong, and they fix it before they make another tire. He said, Dad, it's the most amazing place you've ever seen, and they air up and spin and check every tire. So, and they use American workers, and they use American rubbers, but it says Toyo on the side. So, you're right, there are some what we call rag tires, but they usually have a name that you and I have never heard before, and they're really cheap. So, that's it, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All righty, Terry, thank you very much. Sue, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Well, first I wanted to say thank you. From sometime last fall, my elderly neighbor had given you a call regarding his older Camry. It's maybe an 02 or something. He had some weird thing with his trunk latch and some weird thing with his lighting. And he said, hey, I called up that Mark Salem guy, and he was so helpful, and he told me where to go, and I got it fixed.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
I get great joy out of that. Thank you for making my day.
Yeah,
thank you.
Sure was. Good. Well, I have a 2015 Toyota Sienna. I had the battery replaced by AAA. I know I've heard you talk about batteries in the past, but It's convenient, so I just let them do it. But I noticed somewhere around October, they didn't replace the little battery holder thing, so it slides up on the hill. And that's the first thing. And then I noticed that my overflow coolant lid cover thing, whatever it is, the cap for it, must have been carted off by the pack rats at some point in time, too. So those two things are fairly important. Where would be the best place to replace those oddball little things?
I think in this particular case, and I don't do what I'm telling you to do, but I think I would stop by CarQuest, AutoZone, Napa, or O'Reilly's. Now, up here in Payson, a couple of them are really helpful, really good. They got old guys with gray hair. So you pull up and go up to the counter and you say, I'd like the most seasoned guy to step outside. Do you have a cap for that? And can you help me identify what I need to strap my battery down? And at that particular point, I feel confident that you're going to get some help. Now, there's some parts authority parts houses, PA, parts authority parts houses, that are starting to pop up all over town, and they sell to the public. And I personally know the people that own and operate those, and they don't pay me to tell you this, but I know they would do that, and I know they're honest and dependable, but I've also given a slap on the back to the other four guys, the AutoZone, the O'Reilly, the CarQuest, and the Napa. There's good people in all of those, but I took my mother-in-law's car over to, where was that, AutoZone in Payson? And she had a bad battery. I asked him to retest it because the battery.
Yes, it was.
The manager came out. He goes, yeah, it's a battery. So he pulled the old one out. He brought it out. He cleaned up the tray. He put a new one in there. He put it back together to Mark's complete satisfaction. And he didn't know me from Adam. I could have been a shoe salesman or a doctor or something. But most people don't know. I don't know anything about doctoring except for cars. But the idea is that where he is? But I want to say something about the traveling battery salesmen's. Can I do that?
Sure. I know how you feel about this already, but in case someone else hasn't heard the story, carry on.
I see this all the time. It's the battery's bad, and then the car comes in because the problem reoccurs and reoccurs. I remember sitting at the Bash's parking lot, and I saw this lady with her hood up. I saw the truck come in. He hooked up his cables. I had already looked at it. I already knew it had a bad connection. I already knew cleaning up the bad connection would fix it. And he sold her a tire or a battery, and he cleaned the cable after he put the new battery in it. So I was just upset about that because I thought honor and integrity would rule and certainly make a very good friend of the elderly lady that was in frantic mode. But Then again, thank you, for Sue, for allowing me to.
Well, I did know that my battery was bad, because you can tell when it's going bad, and you think you should do about something about it prior to it actually dying, but I didn't. I just waited till it actually died in the parking lot of the grocery store, which was handy, because it was hot already. It was just the beginning of the pandemic last year, so we could still go back inside the store and wait.
And no,
but I knew, so I totally knew it was the battery, because you can tell it's going.
Well, no, I can't let you go with that. You can't tell it's the battery, but here's the end result. If it's not the battery, if it's the alternator, if it's a shorter, if it's a draw, or if it's the alternator belt's loose, you'll figure it out in the next 10 days. Because the battery will be dead again. So we find that all the time. We find cars come in all the time with new batteries in them, and they've already installed a battery thinking that that's going to fix the problem. The loose alternator belt, the bad alternator, the bad regulator, the trunk light is on and running the battery down, the alternator only putting out 20 amps instead of 60 amps. There's all these problems, and I would say when we run into these electrical problems, the batteries are clearly at least a third to a half of the issues. But we have another 50% that a new battery won't fix, although the battery's dead. So the question is the battery shorted? Is it dead? And in your case, the proof of the pudding is you clearly said you're happy and you haven't had a problem. So clearly they did replace the battery when it needed. But it's not like you know, because Mark Salem wouldn't know unless he has a voltmeter. And so if Mark Salem's battery went dead, then I'd have my wife lick her fingers and put them on both the battery, positive and negative, and if her hair stood up, then I would know the battery is good. And that's a lie, because 12 volts doesn't hurt you. So thank you.
And she would totally do that for you. I know she would.
Yeah, right.
She won't hold on to the spark plug wire when I'm trying to determine if there's spark. So it's
good deal.
All right. Thank you, Sue. Thank you very much. Some of the things that we used to play on one another, we used to run spark plug wires from the engine into the, remember those wire seats, those seat pads that you sat on, and they had wire in them, and it's supposed to make your butt feel better and all that.
Not
kind of
you and me, but you and somebody.
And we'd run a spark plug wire to there, and they'd start the car up, and all of a sudden their butt was being bit by 100 ants and all that other kind of stuff. So we did have fun. That was back when the spark was like on a 1 to 25 scale, the spark was like a 13.
Okay.
And I'm using some KV numbers, but I'm giving it to you in easier numbers. So, but today, if you get bit by the ignition systems today, you're going to cry.
And
you're going to be crying like a little girl. And it's entirely possible that the zipper in your Levi's won't work. And I'm exaggerating slightly, but it really hurts.
Yeah.
So some of the newer model cars have 70 to 100 kV, and the old cars with points and condensers were 10 to 13. So like I said, it hurts on the newer model cars. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 48 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have four lines available. You're welcome to call in, and we'll get you as quickly as we can. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I have no problem telling you he's going to treat you good. He knows how to fix cars. He knows how to raise his hands when he does something wrong, like many of the people I know. As well as many of the people that I know can't. But it's a great place. I-17 and Deer Valley Road, northwest corner. Family-owned and operated auto repair shop. Henry, good morning. Thanks for calling. Oh, let me give you the phone number one more time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Henry, how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Two quick ones. Do you prefer small displacement, lots of power, or larger displacement, lots of power? A lot of the Kias and Hyundais are doing 1.6 liter turbos. Do you think that's more beneficial in the sense of fuel economy, but working the engine harder than a 5 liter or a 3.7 or something like that?
There's no substitution for cubic inches. The bigger the motor, now it's not fair to compare a turbocharged 1.8 to a to a normally aspirated 1.8, the turbocharger is like adding five more cylinders. So we're not, you know, talking about the same thing, but there is no replacement for cubic inches. You can take a 1.8 liter and you're never going to make it outrun a 427. So, you know, it's just, it's not going to happen. But I like power, but if you want fuel economy, then your 1.8 turbocharged motor is ideal. And my wife can testify to that. She has an Edge, and it has a V6, and she has how many miles on it?
120.
120, and the other day she was with her mother, and her mother was driving, and somebody pulled up next to her, and her mother shoved the throttle to the floor and promptly dusted him up to the speed limit of 75 miles an hour.
Sure,
and
sure.
And so, yeah, it's, there's no, again, cubic inches, displacement, how big the motor is, makes everything in the world to me.
Second point, have you ever seen the process of retreading a tire?
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
Yes.
I had the pleasure of being out in Purcell. I shot a video for them and watching the different ways they do it, from making the groove with like an oven kind of thing where you stick it in there, or applying a belt to it. It's pretty fascinating how they do that in 12 steps, and it's ready to go.
No, you're right. You're right. We grind off the old tread. Then we cover it with glue, and we put ribs in it. Then we put the carcass, the new tread, over the top of it. But I don't want anybody to think that Mark Salem says to put a retread on your car, because the retreads were way back when the top speed of most highway cars were 45 to 55. You'll blow that tire up in a heartbeat. So, and I don't...
For semi and mining tires. I mean, a mining tire that's three stories high.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And that goes 3 miles an hour. But hauls the weight of a small destroyer, and I'm joking, but people get the idea. No, you're right. Retreading of industrial tires, and to some extent big truck tires, is an applicable thing, but passenger cars, it's not. And I don't think I've seen a retread on a passenger car in 20 years, so I think we're okay.
They weren't doing those there. Always a pleasure, Mark. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Action Auto, we talked about Action, but we got Auto Dynamics out in Sun City, a big shop, been around since 1982. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I've known Chuck since 1968, 69, and I've got his cell phone. I've got his son's Derek's, and most of us are having second generations in our business, and Derek is a fine example of all the good points of his father, Chuck. And he's a fine example of someone who has learned from the bad things from his father, very much like my kids have. Mm. What are you saying?
Yes, I would agree with that. I'm shaking my head.
Yeah, I know. They could hear you shaking your head with the marbles rolling around.
Oh, boy.
I'm
you
kidding.
You are on a roll today.
I'm kidding. 602-508-0960. Gil, would you like to talk to me today?
Well, hello, Mark. I'm just going to stay away for a little bit.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Car repair, let me explain how easy it is to check a battery and an alternator and a starter with a voltmeter, okay? You'll never remember this, and you don't know why, but I'm going to take and look at the battery power first, and a fully charged battery is 13 volts. So if it's 9, I'm not even going to try to start it, because we need 9.6 to 10 volts to spin the starter. Okay, so you need to know all these numbers. So when you jump start a car, you can't say the battery's bad or the starter's bad or anything's bad till you run some tests. So you put the voltmeter on the battery. It's a 12-volt system. And the battery's showing 13 volts, but the minute you hit the key, the battery voltage drops to 6. Well, the battery's bad unless the engine's locked up. So it's bad. The battery can't handle the load of spinning the starter and starting the engine. On the other hand, if it's 13 volts and you hit the key and it just clicks and the needle doesn't move, then you probably got a solenoid problem, or you could have a bad connection at the battery. So we have all these dynamics moving. Now, when you check the battery, it should be at 13 volts. And then when you start it up, it should be between 12.8 and maybe 14.5. So we need to have an increase of at least a voltage over battery voltage. So if the battery's at 12, we need to be at 13. If it's 13, we need to be at 14, and we won't go higher than 14. So you can test the alternator, but you have to look at the belt, and you have to spin the alternator with your fingers to see if it slips on the belt. So this electrical systems test, and then the voltage regulator, and then we have to check for shorts and draws. So is the trunk light on? Is the alternator bad because the diodes are fried and because when you shut the key off, it's the same thing as leaving all the dome lights on or the fans on? I mean, there's all these moving dynamics. But in order to properly test an electrical system, you have to see what the voltage is in the battery. And under the best of condition, it has to be close to 13. It has to maintain above 9.6 when you crank it over. The starter can't draw more than a couple hundred amps. So we check the amp draw, and if it's 300 or 400 or 500, you go, okay, well, the starter's bad, or the engine's full of peanut butter, or the engine's been overheated, and the load, the excessive amount of electricity we're using to crank the engine over, or it's full of water. You remember when you did that to your car?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to remind you. So those are all the moving parts. Then when you start the car, we need the alternator to bump up the voltage a little bit. Then we need to see amps between 10 and 100. And so we have inductive amp probes, which have a big ring on them. And so you open the ring and you wrap the wire and you close the ring. And now we can read what that wire's talking about. And then after you're all done, then you run a shorts and draws test and make sure that the dome lights aren't on and make sure there's nothing that's consuming the electrical power of the alternator when you're in bed at night. So what's our electrical system check, do you know?
Oh, gosh, I'm so bad because I haven't been to the shop for so long, it seems like.
Oh, well, I don't have it either, so that's terrible.
Yeah, I think it's about $40.
I think it might be more than
that. Yeah, $40 to $45, yeah, or something like that to test the alternator.
And we use the same piece of equipment to do it. And our guys, and many guys, if not all the guys in the valley, can do that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that's easy for us to do. We understand it. And we're just looking for bad alternators, bad starters, bad key switches, bad starter solenoids, those kinds
all
of things.
All that stuff. All You've that been stuff. Working on that on your trailer out front. Did you ever figure out what the draw was?
I'm going to tell you that SOB this morning was 12.6.
Okay.
I need it up north to 13.
I know.
Well, that little charger that I have at the end of this show.
It's probably the charger's fault, right?
It's a little bitty thing. It's hardly bigger than a silver dollar.
Yeah, I know.
And it says, oh, 13, too. That starter, that little bitty piece of crap isn't even capable of 13, too, all by itself. So I've used this little trickle charger to keep the battery up on a trailer, and I've been struggling with that because it ain't working. So
I think you have a short somewhere.
I don't have a short. you live with the car guy.
Oh, I just want to know, were you carrying a voltmeter when you went out and checked that lady's battery at in the parking lot?
No, but I could hear the battery, and I knew doggone well. I knew doggone well it wasn't the battery.
Could have been both.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't. I walked over and kind of looked at him. He had no equipment. He just automatically yanked the battery and put a new one in. So I felt bad for her because he didn't test anything.
Okay.
The road service guys want to sell batteries.
Right.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And so if you end up with a problem 24 hours later, well, it's probably something that happened since the battery, or it was both of them. And when you hear that, you need to flap them, because that's what I'd do to my guys if they said something. And it's happened. It's
sure.
happened. We've missed the alternator. We've missed that it's got a shortener, a draw, or something like that. Mm-hmm. 602-508-0960. We have another hour of fun and frivolity, so you're welcome to join us. And if you have a car question, a motorhome question, a boat question, or if you want me to settle an argument between you and your wife, I am a perfect marriage counselor. We'll be back. Well, good morning, everybody. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'll tell you what I've decided to do.
What is that?
You know how my panties are wadded up over the G159 Goodyear tire?
Yes.
If you have a G159 tire on your motorhome, I will replace them at my cost. You pay mounting and balancing. I'll show you the receipt for the tires. You're going to pay what I pay for whatever brand we decide. And that's how important it is for me to do my best to get those G159s off the road that have already hurt a lot of people. So I'm just telling you, and here's part of the reason I'm telling them, is they're going to go look and see what kind of tires they have.
Sure.
And that's the best thing about it is.
Hopefully they'll check all of them. But I thought they were recalled, but you're saying only one size was recalled?
The 22.5. Yes. Okay. It was a subtle recall. Okay, it wasn't like we're going to notify everybody in the world that we think has, because that's difficult. And in their defense, that's difficult
sure.
to do.
Okay.
But it was the 22.5, the 19.5, which we had on the Bounders. Mm-hmm. Those were still a problem, but not anywhere near like the 22.5 that
were carrying heavier loads.
Yeah.
And, yeah, all that kind of
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. And they blamed it on inflation, and they blamed it on the motorhome was overloaded, and they blamed it on there was no tire maintenance. And all of that today we know is not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is in Phoenix. I've known Nate for a very long time, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He knows diesels, and he really is a diehard diesel service repair, and he sells lots of parts. So no matter if you have a foreign or domestic light diesel truck, and we're talking about semis and less, then Nate over at Strictly Diesel might very well be a place that you want to visit and get to know Nate. I've known Nate for a long time. He's a very tall, he's good looking, and he has hands like tennis rackets. And when people see him, they know they laugh to themselves, but they go, yep, Mark said that's right.
That's Nick.
That's Nate.
Nate,
yeah.
Nate,
yeah.
Why do I call him Nick?
You don't know him as well as I do.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I've only met him once.
I know. Oh, we have a caller.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Who is it?
Say hello to Dan.
Dan, good morning. Thank you for calling. Have your mother call next, and then maybe your wife, okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, I've got a question. It's kind of a little more technical, and it's not on tires or anything, but I have a small block Chevy I rebuilt, probably has 500 miles on it. Changed the oil yesterday. Have a little magnetic drain plug, and there was stuff stuck to the magnetic drain plug. And I heard recently that you really should take the oil filter and cut it open. So I cut the oil filter open, and I don't see any sparkly things in the paper element, but is there any way to look for crud better, like run a magnet over it, or what should I be doing?
Well, you're telling me, I mean, we did that in the 60s. How many miles does this motor have on it? How many hours?
Probably 500 miles. I'm hour-wise, I don't know. It's okay. A fairly new rebuild.
All right.
And this is only the second oil change.
Okay. Well, that I'm not worried about the oil change, but we're going to shed metal as we polish the rings, polish the cylinders, polish the bearings, the camshaft bearings, the distributor drive on the backside of the camshaft. We're going to shed metal until we polish everything. So I'm not real concerned about what you're talking about. The fact that it's on the drain plug means it caught it. That whatever you see there would have never made it through the filter. So I'm of the opinion that if you don't have any knocking noise and that thing ran somewhere around 200 to 220, which is where it ought to be running, and it starts and runs, doesn't drag the starter, and it doesn't have any pre-ignition or pinging, I say you did a doggone good job. But don't worry about the metal. I mean, we pulled magnet drain plugs out of cars that have 150,000 miles on them, and they're going to have some fuzz on them. But nobody cares. Even my truck. And my wife drives my truck. She abuses the hell out of it. And I know that one of these days we're going to pull that magnetic drain plug out and half the engine's going to come out.
Yep. It's all my fault. Whatever happens to it.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. All righty, Dan. Well, congratulations on, is this the first time you've built a motor?
Oh, no. This is probably the 10th or 12th small block Chevy. It's just the first time this is probably the most money I have invested in a rebuild, but it just, you know, after all that work, I'm looking at stuff stuck to a magnetic drain plug, and I'm thinking, okay, is there more somewhere I'm just not seeing?
No, yeah. It would have never made it through the filter. Now, let me ask you, was it a 283, a 305, a 327, a 350, a 400? What was the cubic inches of? Yeah, what I'm doing is I'm telling people that there's a lot of designation for a small block Chevy as opposed to a big block Chevy, which is the 396, the 402, and the 454. So I'm just kind of helping everybody understand what a small block Chevy is.
Yeah, no, this is a 350, and specifically it's the one-piece rear main seal.
Okay.
I got tired of leaky seals, and I came across this engine, so I spent a lot of time and effort on this. And the funny thing is it still dribbles a little bit of oil, but not bad.
And it's going to take a little while for it to, and right now you have the most blow-by that you're going to have until we polish everything up. So did you put a PCV valve system on it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like those systems because otherwise the air inside never really leaves the engine or that cycles it.
Well, it's a vacuum cleaner. It's a vacuum for the engine, so we're going to suck the fumes out of it that contain a lot of air and fuel, and we're going to burn them again. So we have a filter on the passenger side. We have the vacuum on the driver's side, so when we vacuum it, the clean air comes in the passenger side, sweeps through the engine, gathers up all the boogers, mm-hmm. and then sucks them in and burns them and then sends them out the tailpipe. So I applaud you for that. Many of the hot rod guys that are old and gray don't believe in positive crankcase ventilation, but they also complain that the engine's leaking and all kinds of stuff. But if we sucked on the engine then with the PCV valve, then we're in better shape. So congratulations to you. Good job. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we got another caller. I hope your mother calls
really
in like
excited.
We told her.
Yeah.
Okay, who's next?
But it's not our mother, it's Matt.
Oh, yeah, better not be your mother if it's Matt.
That's right.
Okay, Matt, what can we do for you?
Hey, Mark, I was just listening to your previous caller about inspecting the oil filter. The way that we do it on aircraft, small planes actually use the same type of spin on oil filters, is when we cut the paper media out, we stack the pleats up so you have a block, stick them in a vise, crush them until you get all the oil drip out of them. When you take them out, they're nice and dry and gray, and you can see anything that's stuck in the pleats.
Perfect.
The other thing we'll do is when you cut the can off, look inside the oil film inside the can, take it out to the sunlight, and look at that oil film inside the can and see if you see any sparklies suspended in the oil.
Yep. Yeah, there's a slight difference in your task versus our task, because obviously the people in an airplane can't pull off to the nearest gas station and get something fixed. But thank you for that. But let me ask you this. What do you think about putting one of those big magnets on the bottom of the metal oil filter? Have you ever seen that?
Actually, ours have the magnets built into the oil filter.
Okay. Now, is that part of your airplane inspection?
Yes.
Okay.
Every time you do an oil change, we cut the oil filters open, pull the paper media out, inspect the can, inspect the magnet.
Okay.
How often do you do that?
And we're doing it every 50 hours.
Okay.
Oh, 50 hours. That's what I was going to ask. How often you did the oil changes?
And what weight oil do you use?
We actually do have multi-grades now. My own airplane, I run 20W50.
Okay.
20 cold, 50 hot.
Yep.
Most airplanes will run 50 weight, straight weight oil, virgin oil.
Those are Fords. We just talk.
Well, our engines are designed to run full throttle for hours and hours nonstop, and we're air cooled. So we're more akin to a Volkswagen.
I'm teasing you, but I was going to say something about you. And
me?
Yeah.
Her
motor runs pretty much all the time. We're in the car as well.
And yeah, because I'm yelling at you.
Yeah, she's yelling at me.
That's
and
right.
Criticizing my driving. Well, thank you for that. It's interesting because when we go for a motor and we're looking at the inside of the motor, we do an oil analysis, but we have to do two because we look for growth. So if we've got certain amount of metal and 3,000 miles later, after we've changed the filter in the oil, we still have that 3,000 or it's less and less and less. To us, of course, the motor, if it dies, it's not going to be like an airplane,
right,
where you're going to have to find a runway real quick. But when we do a metallurgical test, we're just looking for growth. And so that's kind of our ground level. But 20, let me just change your vernacular, if you don't mind, or offer you a change. It flows at 20 weight, and it protects at 50 weight, but the two of them have everything to do with cold weather and hot weather. So it flows out of the can when it's cold, and it doesn't turn to peanut butter then, and then it still protects you at 50. So it's kind of like a pour point, which is the cold side, mm-hmm. and an oxidation, which is it turns to a black tar. So, and by the way, do you give rides to people in airplanes?
I have taken people. I have a kind of an antique airplane. I have an air coupe. And when I give someone a ride, I give them a certificate that says I flew the coupe.
Oh, that's nice.
That's
now,
cute.
Describe the air coupe. Is it a two-wing?
No, it's a single wing. It's a pre-World War II design, twin tail,
okay,
side-by-side seating, low wing, tricycle landing gear.
Okay, okay, oh. Okay. I can picture that.
But, yeah.
I could, can.
But we do oil analysis the same as you guys do on the cars.
Okay. All right. Now, do you have a button for an ejection seat on that passenger side just in case you get.
No, I'm not going with them.
Oh, so I was just checking.
Actually, all I do is I reach over under their seatbelt and then roll on the side of the airplane.
Oh, that's good. Can you do a complete barrel roll in your airplane?
Once.
Boy, he's got that's exactly there's a lot of things in my world that I can only do once when Renee's around, so I understand.
But I do have something similar you brought up last week about someone sucking transmission fluid in. I do have a smoke system.
Oh.
And I purposely inject oil into the exhaust to create smoke.
Okay.
Oh, so when you're flying, you leave a smoke trail?
If I want, just like what you see at the air shows. That's okay. How they do it.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So he's admitting to polluting the air with
That's
burnt
right.
oil. That's basically what he's saying. Oh, my God. All right. Anyway, Matt, I got to go, but thank you for letting us tease you, and thank you for educating me and everybody else. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and if you got a car question or a comment, or if you want to chew my butt, give us a call. Well, 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem and Renee Salem here. She's decided to stop shopping and come sit and do the radio with me. And I don't have your mic turned on, so they didn't catch that bad word you just used.
Oh, okay.
Oh, doggone it. All right, we got two shops in the valley, and they're on opposite sides, but they're every bit as good as all the rest. You got Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa, been around since 1970, and Brian and Thelma are second or third generations of guys that have been working on cars and their families and selling gasoline. They're on Mesa, actually they're on Main Street, just by Mesa Drive. I messed that up, didn't I? And I'll figure it out here in just a minute. But east of Stapley, Main Street east of Stapley. I was looking at the other ad. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then there's Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. I don't know what I can say about him except that he's ornery. I can say that he really knows older cars really well, and he's really good with newer cars. And I really don't like him, but he's still on my shop. That's Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street and Greenway. Okay, Matt or Darwin, how can I help you?
Yes, sir. I have a 1997 Ford E350 V10.
Okay.
And for almost a year, I've been driving along with the service engine, yellow service engine light on. But nothing has ever happened. Nothing. It runs absolutely perfect for a Ford. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any? So, what do you think?
Well, here's another example of a guy that should be talking to his wife. I mean, you wives know everything there is to know about cars. You want to answer this?
No, I don't.
You know the answer.
Have you had the codes pulled or anything?
No.
No.
Okay. What you've got is a SES light, and it's yellow, which means caution, and it's saying the computer is not seeing something, or it's seeing something it doesn't like. And I'm going to give you just a stupid example. Okay, the engine RPM is 2800 RPM, and of course your Ford will never get that high, but your drive, and it looks at 2800 RPM, it sees your foot throttle, it sees it in drive, but the speedometer is at zero, or the signal from the speedometer is zero. The computer knows that can't happen. Likewise, the speedometer shows 60 miles an hour, and there's no foot on the throttle, or there's a foot on the throttle at 50%, and there's no RPM. So the SES-like means, hey, the computer's complaining, it's lost track of something. So you could do what half the people do, go to one of the auto parts store and have the three-whiskered kid come out and plug his little Shinga there in there and put it, tell you what the heck it is. But the code does not represent the problem. That's the problem with that kind of activity. Oh, you need an O2 sensor. And you have four of them on your car, so let's just put all four of them in. Yeah. After you put four of them in to the tune of $200 or $300, you'll still have the same code and the same light. Although he'll reset them, it may take a couple of days, but then they'll come right back. So then what happens is that a guy like me gets a hold of your van, and you have a vacuum line that's come off. So we put the vacuum line back on, we clear the code, we call you a week, a month later. Hey, how you doing, Darwin? Oh, no, fine, no more light. So wait a minute, we spent $200 or $300 on all the oxygen sensors, but really what was happening was is the engine was running lean. It had too much air, not enough fuel, and the oxygen sensor was screaming, I want more fuel. So you just killed all the messengers because all those O2 sensors were telling the truth. That story is just an exaggeration of what's going on, but that's basically it. You'll need to get that fixed before you go through emissions next, because they'll catch that and kick you out. So,
okay.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Darwin. And I'm teasing you about your V10 Ford, but you know I'm just teasing you. I'm either a Chevy guy, a Dodge guy, or a Ford guy, and it's just easier to pick on the Ford guys because their panties get wadded up a little sooner.
Because I drive one.
And because she drives one.
Yeah,
that's right. Ron, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Hey, I have a question. I have a 2005 F-350 Ford. And it's starting to burn oil, and it's doing all the things. Probably got about 400,000 miles on it. What would be a ballpark figure of what it's going to cost me to get this thing taken care of?
All right, is it a diesel or gas?
Diesel, yes.
Okay, do you know, I think it's a 6 liter, 6.0?
6.0, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything to say good about that motor. I want to tell you, we work on that motor, and I can't tell you the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that those Ford owners with that
that motor,
that 6 liter, have spent money on.
I hear you.
So to answer your question, you're going to be in the vicinity of $8,000 to $10,000 for a rebuilt motor and installed, and I've already got the oil and the filter and the belts and the hoses and the coolant and all that stuff in there. So, and yeah. I may be a little light depending on the core value of what you have, and I may be a little light, and it's not a van. I heard you say it's a truck, and that's good because we can pull the hood off. Now, most of the time on those 6 liters, you're not going to want to see us do this. But we pull your truck in, we unbolt the body from the frame, we have a special hoist that lifts the cab and the bed of the truck up, and then we just roll the chassis out, zzz, 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 zzz. We put that motor in there, and then we put it back. However, to take the cab off is on and off could cost you $800 or more, but you save it on the turnaround because it's almost it's two or three times normal to do it with the hood open. So, have you ever thought about buying that new 6.7 Ford? have you thought about that?
To be honest with you, this is one that I gave to my son, and when I got a new one in 2015, and I've been trying to decide whether I want to help him, you know, overhaul this thing, or whether we want to get him enough. So,
well,
that's kind of what I was just. But you're telling me. I think you're looking at. It could be $10,000.
Well, it could be. I'm gonna open up to 10 to 12 to 13. But here's the deal. If you got 400,000 miles out of the first one, and you know that you did some EGR work, and you did some engine cool, and you got some exhaust leaks, and you got turbo problems, yeah. If he drives it like you,
and you want to put that much money in it, I think, yeah. But if he's 16 years old and he's got a hairy chest and he shows off in front of girls, this may not be the truck to put him in.
I see.
So it just kind of depends. But if he's older and gray-haired and he's behaving himself and you still love him and he still talks nice to you, his mother, and he's married and got kids, then, yeah, you could put one in. The oil usage doesn't bother me because you've been around the world 16 times.
He said he had 400,000 miles on.
Yeah, okay. 400. So that's four equators times four. So yeah. You've been around the world a lot, so you have to keep that in perspective. Now, if it has new tires and new brakes and new this and new that, and the air conditioning system's new, and it's really good on the body stuff, on the body area, but on the new 6 liters, I'm going to backtrack on this one. On the new 6 liters, a lot of this stuff's been fixed. So a lot of the problem areas that we've had since the mid-2000 have been fixed. If you have any other questions, then stay right there. Greg, you'll be my caller next. Ren, I'm going to be back in about 3 minutes. Anybody else, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Ron and Greg, stay right there.
Thirty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem with my wife sitting here next to me, my partner in crime since 1979 when we opened up our first garage. She signed every paycheck since then.
Not in the last 10 years.
Oh no,
I
that's
used
right.
To.
Our yep. daughter Andy is running that's the right. store and signed right. in.
Hey,
checks.
Okay, let me ask you a real quick question on Ron.
Okay.
So if it was a really cherry truck on the outside and you know nice interior and it was handed down to the family, would you replace that motor in it, the 6.0?
You bring up a good point. If it does have family history and it was grandpa's before it was Ron's and he's going to pass it to his son and stuff like that, and it's something that's is nice and they get compliments from people that walk by them after they get out of the truck when they're going to the grocery store, then yeah. I'd put a 6 liter in it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to tell him, though, don't try to upgrade. Don't go to the 6.4 or the 6.7 because that's a mess. But we have improved, and I probably should have said this, the 6 liter is quite different today than it was back then.
Oh, you did.
It was a huge POS back
okay.
then. So.
Okay.
All righty. Greg, you're up next. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark and Renee. Married, 3 teenage daughters. Haven't gotten a word in edgewise at dinner for 19 years. What do you recommend? Just shut up or anything I can do?
No,
Mark doesn't ever recommend to shut up. But okay.
I am the finest marriage counselor there is.
Stop
I mean to tell you.
Your nose is growing
yeah.
by the minute.
And how old are they?
19, 17, 14.
Hmm. Well, I think the 17, are all of them at home?
Well,
yes,
19, 17, 14, probably.
Oh, all of them. I was talking about that 19.
I'm outnumbered.
Okay, all right.
Me and the dog.
Okay, fine. Is there any possibility that we could sneak a special item on their cars to just kind of keep track of how they drive and how fast they go? And it'll give you GPS to see if we call them and say, are you almost home, honey? And she said yes, but she's really in Avondale and you live in North Scottsdale. Do we need that kind of control? Or are you looking for my Dr. Phil advice by saying there ain't no way in hell that you're going to get a word in edgewise if you have 3 teenage daughters and a yappy wife? How'd
ooh,
I do?
Okay. Wow.
I'm using that.
Renee, give me something better, Renee.
yeah, I know. I don't know what to tell you, boy. I'd just probably shut up. That'd be the best.
Now, to some extent, our kids are 2 years apart.
Right.
And so, you know, the 14, 16, and 18.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that are driving, I mean, if they're going to show honor and good sense and stuff like that, then I don't know what you can do, but I can tell you what I did for my son. My son's out there drag racing. He gets in a lot of trouble, and I just restricted his Camaro to 35 miles an hour and 25% throttle.
Right.
And so he can't even go 35. And so the judge says, how long are you going to leave that in there? And I said, as long as it takes, if you'll just reduce that drag racing ticket. And he goes, well, make me an offer. How much was that? How long did he have that in there? How many months?
I want to say 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
He couldn't even get on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a drag racing ticket at the beginning. He's 16 years old, and I get there, and I am so mad at him. because he's right around the corner from the house, and the officer that stopped him is a friend of mine. He says, you better come over here because he's in big trouble. So I'm sitting there talking to him. I'm just chewing on his butt like there's no tomorrow. I'm using bad words. And I go, what were you racing? And he's driving a Z28 Camaro. He goes, oh, it's not important. What are you racing? He points over to this car, and it's a Honda Accord.
Honey, it doesn't matter what you race either. So he got it. He got it.
Knock it
from
off.
You.
Knock it off. I don't know how you're gonna. I mean, have you tried duct tape?
Well, at least they're still talking at me. So I'm happy they're still talking at me.
That's
okay,
right.
And
that's
you know
right.
what else? You just remind them. You might say to them, "There is something important for you to remember. I get the last say on who you marry."
Not
so
really.
I've tried that, Mark.
It's not working for
no
you?
No luck. Yeah.
Okay. All right. How about taking the bathroom door off?
No, that's kind of cruel.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I wouldn't even get dinner.
There you go.
You know, I don't know that I've ever had this question on a car show.
He'd be outside in the doghouse,
I'm yeah,
sure.
No kidding. No, none of them have been in jail. None of them have been
they're
in trouble
good.
At
they're
school.
Great.
All of them get good grades. And the ones that are driving have been driving responsibly. What else could you want? Aren't you being greedy by
happy
trying
man.
To out-talk
yes.
them?
Well, here's my yeah, I'm a good lucky man.
Okay.
So my 19-year-old's got a 2003 Mazda 3. Runs great, lots of miles, but the windows click when you the power windows try
uh-huh.
to get them to go down, all four of them. So mm-hmm. it sounds like the motor's working, switches are all working, but they've got this plastic sounds like a gear spinning.
Uh-huh.
And that's on her car. Is that a common failure?
Yeah, especially for that old. We used to use this. It was a plastic chain, and I'm thinking you might be having that. I think what I would do is the driver door is the most important one for the window. So I think I would fix it first, which would give you an idea of what the rest of them would cost. And
okay.
the driver's window is obviously the most important one because, you know, she needs to hand her driver's license to the policeman that just stopped her. So do the one
drive-thru at Starbucks right now.
And yeah, she can't get her order at Starbucks.
That's
she
right.
has to go in. Let me ask you a question.
So is that just a gear or is it the whole unit? You have to replace the motor, the whole track, everything.
It depends. There's some aftermarket companies that make lots of window parts that wouldn't otherwise be available to you. Oftentimes you have to buy the whole regulator with the motor in it. But to be honest with you, if you want to know, go to the auto parts store and say, hey, I want a window regulator for this Mazda 3, and ask him for an exploded drawing, pull out your phone, take a picture of it, go home and study it. But us gray-haired guys are not afraid of those. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 1.5. This ain't no big deal. But here's the good news. You can hear the motor. That's good news. So that the transmission and the engine is fine. The regulator's kind of like the transmission, so it's not moving up and down. But between the motor and the window moving up and down is going to be some kind of gears. And most of the time, it's something fragile for this reason. I'm driving down the road, and somebody cuts me off. Renee sticks her head out the window, and she starts cussing at the driver that cut me off. I roll the window up, and it's not going to crush your windpipe because it's designed to fail under those kinds of conditions. And she often does that a lot. So it's going to be fragile. I'm closing my eyes and I'm thinking you got a plastic tooth belt and it's broken. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your show.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to talk about cars or talk about your kids, I'm pretty good as a kids counselor, wouldn't you think?
I don't know. I don't think you did too good on that last one. But
I know. He's got his own sets of problems. He's got three girls.
That's why he was asking
I mean,
that's
for a
your
curse.
Advice.
That's a curse. I answered his question about the window regulator.
Oh, okay.
I answered that. We just had fun on all the rest.
Yeah.
602-508-0960. Well, let's see what time it is. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. Been business partners in the car repair business, the car rental business, the car wash business.
Yep, all kinds of business.
All kinds of stuff that some of it's failed, some of it's successful.
Monkey business.
Yeah, and monkey business. Okay, 602-508-0960. Automatic transmission exchange has been around since Jesus was a baby. In 1968, Phil started diagnosing transmissions, and back then they were pretty doggone easy compared to today with all the electronics that decide when and how to shift the car. But Phil's got that under control. 40th Street in Washington, you got a transmission problem. Monday morning and Friday afternoons are not a good time for obvious reasons, but they'll take a ride with you and talk to you if you have a transmission problem. Let's go to the phones. John, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark. Love the show. Been listening for a long time.
Thank you.
And just I want to ask your opinion on, well, on the last question. The first thing I was going to say was I've called over the years a few times, and I kind of felt badly for Tampa Airways, but then along came Harry. So now I feel okay.
Okay.
yeah. But, Harry calls a lot.
Right. So now I feel fine.
Yeah.
My observation from listening to all those years was the technicians from a dealer are kind of like your regular doctor, where they work on male and female, very similar parts with a few different ones. And you guys, the independent technicians or shops, are like veterinarians, where you have to know how to work on A through Z. And that was kind of my observation I wanted to make and see what you thought about it.
No. You're right. That's a great observation.
Yeah, it is.
You're absolutely right. Elephants to worms, and that's by
right.
Let me take the other side of the issue. All of them have some kind of fuel. All of them's had some kind of ignition. All of them have brakes. All of them have tires. It's the idiosyncrasies of each and every one that are important. But you're right. No one technician is going to be good on Alfa Romeo to the Mercury Zephyr. Not even me. Not even close to me.
Yeah.
So, and the guys like BMW guys and Goody over at Goody's Automotive that does Mercedes-Benz and stuff, they're really good at that kind of car, but it is one that, you know, is out there. Lots of them are out there, especially with Goody being in Scottsdale.
Yeah, but, yeah, we don't see a ton of them, the Mercedes or whatever. The other thing is we usually will get guys from different dealerships or that have come from dealer environments, and so it does help us because they can work on a lot of this stuff, but they help each other to fix a car that we might have in the shop or something like that.
We learn from them and they learn from us.
There you go.
So if they get a share, and oftentimes we'll give them cars mm-hmm. like that. We gave Ron a Volvo the other day that was born in what, 1850?
Yeah.
And the horn, we rebuilt the steering box that came with the shift column. It was unbelievable. And then we couldn't figure out how to put this spring in and all this kind of stuff because it came to us in pieces. So Ron walks over there and goes, the wire goes here. Da, 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 da,
yeah,
and we walk
who
away.
Would have thought?
Yeah.
Ron.
And so it's, don't say that.
Oh, but I mean, he's a great technician, but I wouldn't have thought that he would have worked on Volvos that old. But I guess it's just such a basic thing, especially back that old.
And not only that, it's the fundamentals and the gray hair.
Right.
All right? It's not going to beat your butt.
Right.
It's going to, we're going to figure out the wire comes up through the column and then there's a connection where it hits the horn.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we have to fish that down the column and then attach it to the horn. And then the question is it a power lead or a ground lead? So you got to check the other wire and there is no other wire, so it has to be power.
Okay.
So otherwise, you'd have to say, well, the other end of this, is it connect to the fuse box or does it connect to a ground?
Mm-hmm.
But Ron got that. But the answer to your question, John, you're exactly right. There's times, remember the guy that came from the Chrysler store? Don't say it.
I was just thinking about the same thing. We've probably only had two technicians that have come from dealers that said, I just can't do this in a multi-car field.
But he had tremendous air conditioning background.
He did.
That's all he worked on was Chrysler air conditioning.
Right.
And we talked to him about tires and brakes, and he felt pretty comfortable. He lasted like a week or two.
Yeah.
He just says, with all due respect, I got to raise the surrender flag
right.
because Fiats and Tondas and Toyotas are just not my bailiwick.
Right.
But no, you're right. We are veterinarians. And the only difference is that in that analogy, our cars can't talk to us, like veterinarians can't talk to the horses and the mice and the dogs and the cats. But when you're working on just one car, and with computers today, they actually talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're right. Thank you for that analogy.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Veterinarian. What would we call? Is that still a doctor? Can I call myself a doctor?
Doctor vet?
You know, no. But it's a DV, I think. It's
DVM.
A DVM.
Yeah.
And that's doctor of what?
Veterinary medicine, I assume.
Oh,
I don't know.
Good guess.
Well, and the thing is that I write the check to Vicky, our vet. So yeah. I know it's a DVM. But
by the way, if you have horses and you're looking for the best vet in all the state of Arizona, Vicky Baumler.
Right.
She's been our vet for how long? 20 years or more?
I'd say 20 years.
You know the hardest thing with working with Vicky?
What?
She could never decide what kind of truck she wanted.
I know.
Toyotas and Fords and Chevys and Dodges. And she just never could. And she just never could. I always wanted to buy her trucks because they were always like brand new when
they
she sold them.
She changes quite often.
And she does. But she puts lots of miles on them. And then she has that big box in the back that has her surgical stuff in it. And it weighs, I don't know, 1,000 pounds or more, because when we transfer it from one truck to the other, we have to use the forklift.
Well, sure. But it's got to have like some kind of refrigeration in there because she carries lots of medicine and
stuff,
you're
right.
too. So
yeah,
I'm sure that's what makes it heavy.
Nope. Well, anyway, I'm going to start calling my... Mine, I am a veterinarian.
You're
of,
a DMV.
Yeah.
DVM.
No, yeah. We'll have to work on
but,
that.
Yeah, we got to work
I'm
going
to have to get my card.
The call letters.
Yeah. And then I often tell people, and the women enjoy this more than anything else, is our daughter Andy runs our store.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what her business card says. I'm very proud of her and my son,
right.
Alan. But Andy is, she, there
spit
isn't
it out.
Any... There isn't anybody at our shop, any hairy-chested man with greasy fingerprints, that would cross her.
Nope.
But she's the kindest human being in the whole wide world. It's just everybody knows that there's going to be a bark, and then shortly after that, there's going to be a bite.
Right.
Anyway, her business card says, Andy Salem, CEO, CFO, full-time babysitter for the men at Salem Boys.
Uh-huh.
And you know the women gravitate to her.
Yep,
and that's a good description of her job. Her hardest, who's the hardest one she has to supervise?
You.
Oh, Jesus. I was
I
Alan.
Know what you were going to say.
But Alan, our son. But
between you and Alan, she has her hands full.
And she does. But her and Alan have joint responsibilities.
They do.
And so Alan has the techs in the shop, and Andy has the front counter and all that kind of stuff. But they work... Unbelievably, we are blessed in ways you can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to Andy and Alan, because they've just, and both of them, while they're in their late 30s, early 40s, they've been in our business for 20 plus years.
Yeah, Alan's 25 and Andy's 20, over 20.
And they tell anybody who asks that they start picking up cigarette butts at our gas station at the mobile station.
Yep.
And they all laugh about that. And then they bring their own kids over there, and I hand them the little scooper and a brush, and they don't want nothing to do with
it. Well,
that.
Yeah.
And people
we don't
smoke.
Have cigarettes like we used to, but pick up trash, yeah.
Yeah.
Your grandkids have all done that, too. You are a slave driver.
I am. If they want to be paid, they have to work.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
I mean, folks, it's important to know that our marriage has gone on for 400 decades, and we have been well known by our friends and relatives and stuff. I am Jack the Ripper, and she is Snow White. If you need a hug or a kiss, you ain't getting it from me. You better go to her. But if you need your butt chewed, all of them will send that person to me. Is that fair?
That's fair.
That's true.
That's true.
Raise your right hand and swear that I know that's true.
Yeah, I think we were kind of reversing a little bit of our roles, though.
When? Now?
Yeah. Oh. I'm getting a little grouchier and you're getting a little nicer sometimes.
That depends on who you ask.
Okay.
I have a much better relationship now that I'm not the boss of the guys in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I can walk through and say, how's your wife and how's the kids and all that kind of stuff. And there's just a kind of a different relationship.
Sure.
But we're still there a couple of days a week, but the kids are running the store, and it's just been a real blessing for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and our grandkids actually work there at times. We have Mark and Rex and Lexley and Josie, and all of them. And it's fun because the people upstairs will say, here, take this down to Mark, the service writer, or take this down to Daniel, and they feel kind of really important.
Sure.
To be involved in, or go ask Jeff in parts if, you know, if he has that case of beer for your mother, stuff
yeah,
like that.
No, or go get me a Coke, Josie. Or,
yeah, that's true.
Give me a donut, Josie.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. How old is she? Five?
Five, yeah.
5 years old.
Right.
And she's the newest member of our family. She belongs to Andy, and because of the COVID thing, and she's been spending some time at the shop. And she has gone downstairs and learned how to take the cup and get ice and fill it full of Coke for Pop.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't fill it full because she walks up the stairs. So she's a little scared of spilling it. So
sure.
It's kind of half full. And
yeah.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
Okay, if you have any car questions and you don't want to talk to us at this particular time, you can email me, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. I would like it very much if you would give me a phone number and recognize that I call from a blocked line for obvious reasons. But this morning I spent a good hour calling people back, talking about particular problems that I needed to ask more questions to. So if you leave me your phone number, I am going to ask more questions. And oftentimes I'd like to call you rather than type my fingers to the bone.
Yep, he's not a very good typer.
Yeah, I got three fingers that work, and guess which ones they are. But nevertheless, it's just easier. I'm going to have questions, and that's the important part, is just the questions part.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to get in this email dialogue where it turns into five or six exchanges, seven exchanges. So I'd rather just spend 10, 15 minutes with somebody and just get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
So I answered two calls today, and both of them were rather interesting, which were questions that I haven't had in a while.
Okay.
And so it was an interesting, should I go by the owner's manual or should I go by, you know, what do you say? And actually, I differed from the owner's manual, but he was a low-mileage annual car.
Okay.
And so the owner's manual doesn't take the bottom 20 and the top 20, or even the bottom 10 and the top 10, those people are outside of the range.
Mm-hmm.
They're right in the owner's manual for the people at 50 to 35 and from 50 to 75. I mean, you have to kind of adjust things after that.
I see.
So you got Grandma Moses that drives her car 5,000 miles a year.
1 minute.
She has a different maintenance schedule than everybody else.
Yeah, but so, you still say oil change at least once a year.
You're right. You're right. And every other year we'd rotate the tires, and each time they're coming in for an oil change, you check all the fluids, all the belts, all the hoses, check the spare, and look for obvious problems that are going to cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
Steel hanging out of the tire, nails in the tire, brake lines that are leaking, oil leaks, batteries that are corroded, that kind of stuff. The oil change is more than just draining your oil, replacing the filter. It's a complete inspection. And the inspection is, will this car go another 3,000 miles, 5,000 miles? We don't have a crystal ball, so we can't tell you for sure, but we can look at the obvious stuff.
Yeah.
And the obvious stuff helps us that my industry, not
right.
just us, my industry, helps us tell you what you're faced with.
Yeah. We hope all of you guys have a great Easter weekend
and
your family.
From our family to yours, God bless you, and thank you for spending your Saturday with us.